Everyone is talking about MCPs today. As the last time I checked, there are like over 2,000 MCP servers already live. Everyone is approaching it together and also differently. I think at this point in time, almost every large platform has an API, and you can actually use those APIs to build your own kind of MCP server. Eventually, even if you have like a fleet of AI tools, it's going to come down to how do you use them to solve whatever problems are in front of you.
Hi, this is Brian Douglas, and you're listening to Open Source Ready, a bi-weekly series where we discuss the evolution of open source software and its impact on the tech landscape. Along with my co-host John McBride, we'll explore topics like open source AI, the business, and the life and sustainability of open source. Open Source Ready is brought to you by HeavyBit, the leading investor of developer-first startups. For more information, visit HeavyBit.com. If you're interested in being a guest on the show, or if you'd like to suggest a topic, find us at x.com/opensourceready. Welcome to another installment of Open Source Ready with my co-host, John McBride. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine. I busted up my knee in Crested Butte skiing last weekend, so...
Oh, wow.
I'm all right. I'm getting around okay. I'm just hobbling around while I do.
No standing desk today.
No standing desk. Well, I don't use my standing desk much anyway, so...
All right. I won't tell your...
Don't tell my doctor.
I won't tell your insurance provider that you're sitting all day at a desk.
Exactly. Exactly. How are you doing, Brian?
I'm good. I've been vibing this whole vibe coding thing. I've been doing that all weekend, and I sent you a note over the weekend. But yeah, just prototyping ideas and then getting to production ready products in less than a day is like kind of unreal. I tend to noodle around too much about like the non important details, and I think having a little chat AI in my editor unblocks me faster is the word I'm trying to say. Anyway, wanted to introduce our guest, Adewale Abati, and goes by Ace on the internet. Ace, welcome. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me. I was just going to follow up with John because I actually had a fracture over the weekend playing football. Like I still have like a...
Oh, no.
Oh, wow. Wow.
This is an audio-only podcast, but yeah, I mean, that looks like an intense cast.
It was just the elbow. I think I had a radial head fracture from a fall.
Ooh.
But I'm good. It should get better in like a week or so.
All right. Can you still type? I mean, you still got mobility in the fingers?
Yeah, I still have mobility in the finger, but it kind of hurts a bit. So my left hand has actually been surprising me. I did not realize I had so much experience typing just one hand. So he's doing a good job, and I'm trying to just, you know, get used to moving the mouse with it as well.
Yeah, I mean, luckily we've got like AI to where you can just like talk to the editor at this point.
Yeah, we'll probably get it today a little bit down the line.
That's what I was going to say is, you know, vibe coding and AI-assisted editors is actually incredible for accessibility.
100%. Last week, we did a live stream our work using a speech MCP, and something that I could just ask it to do stuff. Combined with AI agents like Goose itself, it's just like, thank you. Thank you for inventing this.
That's great.
Excellent. Well, we actually want to talk about Goose. So you're at Block. I've known you at Block as doing TBD, which we can talk about briefly, like what was TVD and where it's at now. But we did want to get to talking about Goose and what you all are doing with AI runtimes and agents.
Yeah. Hello, everyone on the podcast. My name is Adewale. Everyone calls me Ace. Currently, I'll Block as a staff developer advocate, and I've been there for about almost 2 years now, actually. Like Brian mentioned, I did start with TVD. TVD was focused on like open standards for decentralization, mostly finance. So we're working on technologies that would push that kind of decentralization, stuff like DWNs, which was like decentralized web nodes, Web5 itself, and all of those things. Right now, there's been a shift in focus from TVD. So all the projects and technologies that were created at that time have been donated to like other open source foundations to keep it moving. So recently, I also switched teams and I've been working on Goose, which is an open source as well AI agent that is doing things. I'm always super excited to talk about it because I see the way different people use in different areas, in different professions, and it's like, oh, wow, that's a great idea. So I'm super excited to just talk about that and also find out how people are also vibe coding or, you know, trying to create stuff with these new tools that are getting every other weekend, you know.
Yeah, so could you explain what Goose is real quick for the listeners?
Yeah, so for any of the listeners that don't know what an AI agent is right now, think of it like a super personal assistant. The brain is the LLM. So you have like an LLM, like on a, what's it called? GPT-4, 4.0, 4.5, or Gemini, as the case may be, as the brain behind these tools. But then they also have like additional abilities to take your instructions and go act on them. So a typical example I would give is, if you're speaking with ChatGPT, for example, hey, I want to do this, it kind of gives you the code back or gives you suggestions. But with an AI agent, because it can act based on your instruction, it can take what it should have given you as a response and actually go work on it, go do something about it. And I think that kind of just transcends even beyond just coding, because thanks to the continuous advancements, now you can use to manage activities on your computer, you can use to connect to like your existing applications like Google Drive, Google Calendar, all of those tools that just makes it like, oh, okay, just go do this thing for me. I'll be here watching. So AI agents for me are just like that AI-powered assistants that just listens to you and can also be like, it's entirely under your control, basically.
Yeah. One of the things that I noticed immediately about Goose that really stood out to me and I'm very excited about it, is its deep integration with MCP. It's almost like a universal MCP client where your agent with Goose can go and, you know, use a bunch of MCP servers. So maybe we could tee people up. What is MCP? How do you think about it? How does the Goose team think about it?
Yeah, I mean, everyone is talking about MCPs today. And to take it back a bit as well, let's think about when APIs were first, like, you know, shared with everyone. Like, hey, you can use APIs to connect with applications, you can build your own front-end and whatever on top of any API. It kind of opens up the world to things that, oh, I wish I could do this. And then moving into the era of AI tools where people are able to ask questions with LLMs, interact with LLMs, and now we want to also be able to bring the intelligence that these LLM tools bring into tools that I already use every day, like Slack, like, you know, my Gmail, my calendar, all of these things. MCP is providing that protocol that just kind of standardizes the way all these AI agents, AI tools can take advantage of this opportunity or access your data without having to reinvent the wheel every single time. With the API example, if three different websites want to consume a specific API, libraries came into play to make it like standardized in a way. But you still have to like write your business logical around that. It's still very custom-based. But with MCPs, it's very, very consumer-focused, where the AI agents take this MCP. They don't have to reinvent any wheel. The standard is already there. And you as an end user can use pretty much any agent that supports the MCP standard itself to work on any of these tools right out of the box. So MCP as a protocol itself just opens up a world where it's an ecosystem that you can continue to build more things upon it. And most of the infrastructure, when you have a system like that, it means the possibilities are quite endless, because it's not just about what we've created. It's about you being able to create so many things on top of what has been created. And I think that makes it amazing.
Yeah. So can we talk about the origin of Goose as well? So like Block is known for its like its Square tablet reader and like payments and a bunch of other stuff. This is a dev tool. So I was just curious, like, at what point is this making sense for Block?
Right. So actually, Goose started as an internal tool. We wanted to find a way to bring in, you know, more productivity through AI, you know, tools within our, you know, organization. I just seen how it started to improve the productivity. It was like, oh, we can actually expand on this and make it open source, so that more users can use it, more people can build on top of it as well. And that's the power of open source, you know, right? Because when you open things up like this, different people across different areas of, you know, expertise are able to contribute stuff into your technology and make it even grow faster. So ever since the launch, January 28, it's grown exponentially in the sense that we've gotten contributions from different organizations and even individuals. It talks about the collaboration as well around MCPs. Goose was initially built in Python. So we had things we call like toolkits. It was kind of like its own ecosystem. But just the collaboration that open source brings to be able to work on something like MCPs together and just kind of redesign Goose around MCPs themselves. So it feels like it's an MCP client today. I mean, it is, but it's, even the inbuilt tools for Goose are MCP servers. So like the things that makes it work beyond just, you know, a chat tool are built in a way that support MCP, you know, set up and a lot of those things. So that kind of just opens up the extensibility of Goose. And I think it's one of the things that goes best for it. Number one is open source. Number two is the extensibility. There's no caged, environment. Like, oh, you have to use this LLM tool or you are limited to these sets of extensions, as case may be. You can make Goose be what you want it to be, like very much customized to yourself based on the MCP servers that you choose to install.
One of the sort of classic problems that I guess, you know, if this was APIs, like you had mentioned, you know, that's kind of the old world, would be like service discovery. So, you know, if this started as an internal tool, I'm curious how you and the Goose team are thinking about discoverability of MCP servers. Because obviously, you know, I can Goose add or Goose config or whatever for an MCP server. But yeah, that seems like that will start to get hard to manage eventually, or just being like, I kind of don't care, you know, how you figure this out. I just want you to go access, you know, thing on my Google Drive or my Notion, and then it can go and discover that. Like, is that discoverability problem something that has come up already or that y'all are thinking about?
I think so. It's a very good question because everyone is approaching it together and also differently.
Uh-huh.
As the last time I checked, there are like over 2,000 MCP servers already live. And these are servers that were built for the common applications that we use. So you think Google Calendar, you think Slack, you think Figma, you think some of these tools. And we've had a couple of websites as well, like Pulse MCP, like Glamour.io, that kind of rates these MCP servers. It's also the way you find multiple MCP servers for the same platform because people build their own version and all of those things. But it would always still work because they're fully the standard, right? And you can plug and play into MCP clients like Goose. So in terms of discoverability, as an open source project as well, Goose, we have like a created list of MCP servers that we try and we've tested out, kind of like, hey, you can install this directly out of our extension site. But the best part is also is that you can literally install any MCP server. So if I found it, I think I've came across one MCP server that I don't think the developer knew anything about Goose. So it was configured like just, hey, this is the command to install this MCP server on your own. You can install those kind of MCP servers on Kuza as well and use it directly with the AI agent because, like I said, the standard is there. So it kind of solves the problem where you have to manually integrate. Oh, this is how this works. Let me configure specially. That's where MCPs kind of like shine. It just eliminates that entire complexity. I still think there's a little bit of technicality required in the sense of, as an end user, you need to know what MCPs are to go look for, oh, I need an MCP for maybe a particular platform, right? Which is where we go, we kind of call them extensions. And we're trying to create as much as we can, just say, oh, just install an extension versus think about like, oh, I'm looking for a model context protocol server, that kind of thing. Sounds very technical. But the more we get into that space, I think today you'll find people that are not developers at all that would mention APIs like, hey, I know these guys have an API. So it might get to a point where the whole, you know, the general public will also be like, oh, these guys have an MCP and stuff like that. So fingers crossed.
You mentioned in passing it was originally written in Python, and I'm saying like 70% of the code's in Rust. What was that that story?
I think it also came with like the extensibility, being able to port into something that would be plug and play. I'm not 100% sure, but I think the MCP protocol that we worked on to build like the new version of the Goose client also had like a Rust SDK. So I think that kind of just made it easy to do plug and play and transition once and for all into a Rust environment and keep that moving going forward as a stable release into, you know, the different platforms that could possibly use Goose.
So is the goal to like, because you mentioned like a couple examples like with Slack and other sort of MCP servers. And I think the context I have around MCP is like, yeah, it'd be cool if GitHub to create their own MCP server so that I can run an agent that has knowledge about GitHub. And it sounds like GitHub actually has this with like Copilot extensions, sort of. And I've actually been messing around with those all weekend, and they're kind of underwhelming, to be quite honest. So I'm curious, like, what's the incentive for like all these companies to leverage MCP, but also is Goose kind of like laying the egg that everyone can now proceed with like building MCP servers? Like, what's the adoption look like?
I think the adoption has been geared mostly towards using MCP servers versus you individually building them. We do have like a training, like a tutorial extension that teaches you how to build an MCP server because we want you to build your own extension. And that kind of comes back to the question that you asked about the companies building their own MCP servers. I think at this point in time, almost every large platform has an API, and you can actually use those APIs to build your own kind of MCP server, right? Zapier launched an MCP server, I think, this past week, and it's exciting. I've not tried it out yet, but I was looking at what the functionalities were. And just through Zapier alone, it gives you an ability to connect your AI agent or AI to all of the platforms that you already currently automate. So just installing that one single MCP server opens up your world into tons of automation. right, from your AI clients, right, to be able to tell it to go do something, and it goes to you from Slack to Twitter to like anywhere else. So as of today, there are multiple versions of, say, a GitHub MCP server, because some people build the MCP servers on either their REST clients or their, you know, their GraphQL client, as the case may be. But when it comes to the integration, the best thing I like about it is how they work together. So for example, I could use a Tavily MCP server, which kind of, Tavily does like deep web research, you can go online, find latest updates on or information about something. And I can say, go online using this Tavily extension MCP server, get some of the latest information around sentiment, even something that is not just directly like a blog post or whatever. The AI tool is able to come in to analyze the sentiment and then create a summary for me in Google Drive. Like, those are things that are very possible today thanks to AI agents. It's more than just, I think it's slightly more than just automation. It's like there's a thought process, there's thinking in there where you're able to plug and play into multiple platforms all at once, that the automation, if I wanted to do maybe like a manual automation in the first place, that's kind of like a unique environment for me to see how to specifically customize the automation in this case. Because tomorrow it could be, oh, do this research, then improve my GitHub PR based on the best practices for SQL injection or something like that, right? With the GitHub MCP that I tried earlier today, I mean, I use it every day, but I did something today where I merged a PR. My manager should know he had this, but I merged a PR, and there was a, I think there was an oversight where there were like some CSS issues. So I basically took the PR link to Goose, and I was like, hey, using the MCP server, the GitHub MCP server, and you actually don't even need to like spell it out, because if I'm sending a GitHub link, it's able to tell that this is GitHub related. So if I'm like, hey, look at this PR, I shared the link, something is broken related to this. Can you check out how to best to do this? Was it DocuSign's thing? So I was like, check out how best to do this. So he found out, he checked out the PR using the GitHub extension. Then he went online using another MCP server to find out the best way to solve what I was dealing with. And he came back to me and gave me a summary, right? Like just in my editor there while I was grabbing a cup of coffee or something like that. And I think that those things open up an endless world of innovation. And the best part about it is we don't also have to wait on these organizations like GitHub specifically or Figma specifically for them to create these MCP servers before people can create them and use it in their applications.
I dropped in the show notes the link to the, I don't know, someone at Zapier did like an announcement of the MCP thing. So like that announcement tweet, just like scrolled through and like, wow, this is amazing. Because only 2 weeks ago, there was like another tweet of like, oh, MCP, that's just kind of like Zaps. So I feel like this world is like moving crazy fast, and it's like hats off to the block team and Codename Goose to like be so early on this this wave and helping to build more structure with this protocol. But the other thing I was thinking about is like, man, like again, I opened up with this podcast with like how I was vibe coding and I've been leveraging AI to unblock me in a way that like I haven't had since I, you know, was 10 years younger and had so much energy and coffee that could code throughout the entire night. Like a night code session for me in like my 20s is literally a couple hours with some AI-enabled coding assistant. And that's mainly because I already know how to use, I know how to write code in the same way I know how to use an API. Mm-hmm. So when I get handed over an MCP server, I'm like, okay, well, like say less. I can now put together a real product. And that's where I sort of swim is like productizing ideas rather than trying to build out the guts and the framework and protocols. So just kind of just making a statement of like, man, this is exciting times. And folks, you got to be paying attention to this stuff.
Yeah. Talking about that, I was going to ask a follow-up question. Like, how did it feel for you going from like the zero to whatever point you got to vibe coding? Because it's nice when you have the idea you want to go into in your head and then being able to vibe through it. Doesn't mean you don't have to be the entire thing. But like that process and just being, watching the agents do his thing, how is that for you?
Yeah. Way to turn the mic around. But I on Blue Sky, just before this chat, I Blue Skied. I don't know what you call this, tweet posted?
Skeet.
Skeeted?
Yeah.
I skeeted all over Blue Sky this morning. And it was like I posted how I felt, which was I felt like Michael Jordan in the Wizard era. So like Michael Jordan came back to basketball a third time and played for the Wizards in the 2000s. And the first half of the season, like they won like 23 games and then he got hurt. And then he ended up not having a great end of that year. But I feel like that year of like, man, I'm like 38 years old, Michael Jordan around that same age. And I'm just like crushing through this idea. And I sat on this idea for the longest time where like I wanted to basically take recipes from Instagram and generate, like make an agent to basically generate some recipes from that and like save that for later. Sunday morning, I started. And by Sunday, like basically in the first couple hours of the morning, like I had a full-on prototype. And then by that night when I got back to it, I had a full working production-ready application. And that's like a pace that I don't normally keep when it comes to, like, I'm trying to look at docs, remember like where I got started, like how do I run Superbase migrations from the command line?
Yeah.
How do I connect a local database with Postgres? Like all this stuff, I'm just like, just cruising through and leveraging the chat and AI tools to get unblocked.
100%. I think the best use of these tools are things that require you to like manually do stuff. Like you know what you want to do, but it takes a couple of steps to do it. Like you don't have to go through those steps, just like skip through it. I mean, not skip entirely, but like the AI agent does the steps for you. And then you just pick up with the next step. You think through stuff, you have you go do that thing, and you think through stuff and you have you go do that thing. I think it's the fine balance between letting the AI completely take over versus maximizing the most of the benefits that the AI tool provides for you.
Yeah. And like, so I mentioned Superbase in passing. Like I could see, I don't know if they have an MCC server anywhere or if they built this, but.
Yeah, I think
they do. Do they? Okay. I'd be surprised. They move at a super fast pace over there. But like just maintaining and managing my database and connections and like now I'm adding like vectorized columns in there, which is like concepts that I know about, but like I've never done from scratch. I'm able just like to leverage the tool at hand. And I've been using AI to basically generate my migrations and stuff like that. But in a perfect world, I'd use an MCP service to be like, hey, my data is changing in this way based on these features. Like here's a screenshot of what I designed. Like, go update the database to be ready for it.
Nice. Most of the vibe coding tweets I've seen for people that built out like MVPs and the likes have been a combination of whatever framework they were using, plugged into the database through the Superbase MCP, and then deploying to a different services in another MCP, whether it's Vercel or GitHub or whatever the case is. And you basically completed the cycle just vibing. Which also poses like the question that people are like, how secure is this? Why should you be doing this? Is this production ready? And maybe for someone that is probably not aware of the steps it would take normally to like build a production ready app, then you would make the same mistake even if you were learning how to code and you built something that wasn't production ready and you launched it pretending to be production ready. It's just that you get to that finish line quicker than you face your woes like, oh, I should have made this more secure. So when I see people blame the AI tool for that, I'm like, it's not the AI tool. It's more like the person using the AI. Because if you sat down there and you ask the AI tool, like, okay, we're done building this. Is there any security thing I should be worried about? It's going to give you a review based on what it thinks like, oh, we did this, we did not do this. So I think it falls back down to the human to make sure you go through all the checklist or at least ask the questions that matter so that the AI can best serve you in a way that you do not regret in the future.
Yeah. John, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about Go channels and like some like dragons around like not deferring properly and stuff like that. I actually opened up a PR with one of my Go projects and like Copilot, you can now review code in a PR in browser. Actually caught some of that stuff. So like asked the right questions and then pointed out like, hey, you should like perform. And I'm going to use the terms all incorrectly because like I literally vibe coded this stuff. But it's like the mutex here, blah, 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 close this, defer here. Like all that stuff is stuff that it takes me a long time to like wrap my brain around, like the server side code, to be able to make sure that it works and proper. But I wanted to take advantage of performance. So ended up asking the chat, hey, I actually want to improve performance based on how many cores available. Write that code. And it's like I'm able to like trust it with the, probably should write some more tests to be quite honest, but like trusting it just by, you know, deploying it and seeing what happens.
Yeah. That's smart.
Yeah. Go is also one of those languages that I think is like just simple enough and powerful enough that works pretty well for, you know, whatever this is, vibe coding, prompting, et cetera, et cetera. I've had sort of opposite experiences actually with languages like Rust or OCaml, where the semantics and the syntax are like it just can't do Rust very well, at least right now. And that sort of makes sense, just given like it's kind of verbose syntax. Maybe there's just not enough of open source Rust out there for it to have like slurped up and used. But these things also are getting better every day. So who knows? There's probably a like good enough MCP server for Rust these days that I should be using.
It is insane how good these tools are getting every single day. Like I get surprised. I I mean, working on Goose puts me in a position where I'm like checking out these AI tools and trying to stay up to date as much as possible. And I get blown away every other day. Like the Zapier MCP, for example, I was like, oh, wow, these are all the applications that you're giving me access to. With the concept of MCPs at first, like as of January or December last year, which is like 3 months ago, I didn't know anything about MCPs because they were still building and then they launched. And I was like, okay, now your LLM tools can tap into any application that you already have. And we hear about the new AI tools, the new models every other week. And you're like, how fast is this thing going to get? And one of the sessions or calls that I had last week, it was, we're talking about how close we were to having something like Jarvis, like with the whole entire Iron Man experience where you would want it to do something and like, hey, Jarvis, what's the weather report? I mean, weather reports is simple, but I'm thinking about Iron Man 3 right now where there was like an explosion. I was like, you know what, map out all the explosion locations for me in the map. Let me see it. That is something that we can actually do today. I can use a speech MCP on Goose and say, hey, based on the recent bombings or shootings or whatever the event I want to track, like, get the data for me on the internet, plot a chart with the locations and show me what it looks like. I can use my voice to tell Goose to do that today, and I'm going to get a chart or a map or something popping up on my screen in less than 5 minutes. And I did not have to write any code. So it's not as fancy, obviously, as the whole HUD, you know, the view and all of those things with Jarvis, but we are getting there kind of with functionality, with the interactivity. And it's like, what would this look like in 6 months or a year? That's the same.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Jarvis. I actually was going to bring this up. You know, partly because I've been building with a lot of these things. I've been building a small agent framework in Go, actually. And something I've been thinking about is this idea of like anthropomorphizing all these things, or really like humanifying them or making them seem as if more, you know, like it has a personality, or maybe it, like Jarvis, has kind of a humor,
right,
or has like a funny British accent or something. I think I'm actually starting to kind of swing back in the direction that making these things more and more human-like is just maybe not, is almost going to restrict them in their capabilities or in their, like, you know, because the amount of time we can spend in these frameworks and these things trying to make them funny or have a personality or be more and more anthropomorphized, it's just like not exactly what this technology is. But I'm curious if, you know, Goose or the team has thought about this at all.
Yeah, I mean, starting with my team, like with DevRel team, Rizal gave a talk on, you know, anthropomorphism, and that was probably the first time I came across the term in my first place. I was like, oh, that's true, because I used to tell people, like, you know what, just think of Goose as, or your AI tool as, what's it called, your guy, if that makes sense. So maybe there's a is at the point where we need to probably take a step back from that and think of them as tools, as what they are, and also build them in that way so that humans still are able to keep what makes us human, but at the same time, we're able to maximize the benefits that these tools bring to us, because we are using them in multiple ways that go beyond just, oh, this sounds funny, or this sounds, you know, cool, or whatever the case is, and we can take back our own time. So I think it's a very interesting topic. I'm sure different people would have different, you know, perspectives on stuff like that. But I'm in agreement with you to take a step back from trying to humanize these tools or build them in a human fashion so that, oh, they feel human, because they're not. At the end of the day, at least right now, there are tools that we can continue to improve upon. I was reading this book, Wise Animals. I can't remember what the author was, but it's like how technology, like, you know, works over and evolves over the years. And it starts with the first paragraph was like, technology is stuff that we don't understand yet. And that's exciting, because now we use things that we don't even think too hard about, and just like every other day thing, maybe our smartphones and likes. But at some point they were like, I can't remember when the iPhone launched. And then the chapter I'm currently on is also saying things like the time it took us to get from one invention, like say, let's say cars or like engine cars or oil cars to like smart cars or whatever the case is. And the time it's going to take us to do the next invention is exponentially smaller because the tools continue to grow at a pace that is just different from our time as humans. Because first of all, we've accumulated some of this information. We've built these tools that they're able to even create more tools by themselves. And if it took us 1,000 years to get to point A, there's a very high chance it's going to take us only 10 years to get to point B. And then eventually these things would outlive us because they're not technically restricted by our time. So we have to like observe the pace at which the innovation goes and try to see that we make the most of it while we're still here.
Would you consider yourself an AI accelerationist?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm kind of like...
Maybe an unfair question, but
yeah, I don't know if I want them to move like ridiculously fast, but at the same time, I recognize the fact that it is moving fast. As long as we kind of like, you know, have this ethical conversation around it, like this is things that we're trying to build. I don't think it's going to solve all the problems. There's still conversations around security, even with MCPs, even with agents. Like, how do we, you know, continue to enforce security and privacy and all of those things? And it's an ongoing conversation. But I don't think we can put a cap on innovation. Things will continue to like get built, either we want it or not. It's just about how we manage it, you know, across our spaces, and also how we continue to make use of them to, I don't know, to the best of our abilities, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Cool. Well, honestly, Ace, appreciate you having the conversation about Goose, about what Block's working on. It's fascinating. Like, accelerationists, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like I'm now on a conveyor belt that's moving quite fast. So if it goes any faster, I couldn't even imagine, like, trying to keep up with this stuff. So I need my AI agent in my voice recorder on my necklace and like my car to like drive me places to keep up to date. But with that said, I do want to move us to reads. So Ace, are you ready to read?
Am I ready to read? Yes.
Read.
Excellent. Let's get into it. John, you had a read that was going to be spicy. So you want to go first?
Yeah, I could do my spicy read. So this was something that I pulled off of Hacker News, was kind of going viral there. And it's titled The Burnout Machine. And, you know, I've read these, you know, these little kind of, I don't know, quips before that, you know, inevitably lead people to say, like, we should unionize as, like, tech workers, or we should, like, organize as, you know, builders. And, you know, I found this one particularly gut-wrenching, or just, like, you know, it really resonated with me in a lot of ways. The TLDR is just about how, you know, you're sort of expected to like show up to these giant tech conglomerates. You know, there's a bunch of fun, sexy stuff they're going to do for you, like meals and pizza parties and massage chairs and, you know, whatever. But then inevitably, 2, 3, 4 years later, you're just completely burned out. And just like the pace of work and expectations seems to be kind of unreal. And I sort of feel like that's only gotten worse as, you know, return to office continues. And
yeah,
I don't know what that's going to look like with the future of tech work, because, you know, even just a few years ago, it was like showing up to do some code and like cut some features. And like, it honestly wouldn't surprise me if like in the future, every tech worker was sort of a manager of their own like AI fleet, trying to like get that complexity to make sense, and then like still shipping things to other people. And just like the graph of how this could look in the future could be very interesting. But, you know, it's a spicy read, because I feel like anytime, you know, you bring up unionization or organizing within any job sector, there's a lot of opinions. So I don't really know how I feel about it, I guess, is my read of this.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's got an opinion around this. And like, I feel like when you bring in the union sides, like, so I'm looking at, and this like might ruffle feathers and get us canceled, but this is my opinion. But like, I look at Starbucks. Starbucks had like a unionization a couple years ago. Like, I don't remember the last time I went to Starbucks. Like, I'm happy that there's like jobs and people can have Starbucks and there are like hometowns, and there's only, I guess there's only like one or two unions that to existence for Starbucks so far. But it is like, it does like set the stage of like, okay, well, it's unionized. Does it really matter? Or are we going to move slower? Like, if you try to build a house or get any sort of renovations here and specifically here in Oakland, California, the time to get permits is like ridiculous. And it does come down to like a lot of red tape that happens. So in the event that like, okay, let's figure out how we can get either paid more or get it established in like standards, like that we might move the cheese pretty quickly. Like, especially like how you mentioned, like, the do we manage a fleet of agents? The other thing was, I know with the airline pilots, which I know this might be like an overuse analogy, but like is AI gonna take my job? Like with AI, like airline pilots, like you take off and you use autopilot. So like you like are just watching the bleeps and blops on the screen. I imagine there's a little bit more to it than that. I've never flown a plane.
I've actually asked my pilot buddy about this exactly, because I'm like, this seems like something ripe for, or even like, you know, maybe you'll be sitting in a cube one day to like, you know, man 3 or 4 of these different planes from your drone operated, you know, thing or something, and just like remote into it. But what he tells me though is that like, while autopilot is very good, and I think this actually rings true for a lot of how AI works today, autopilot's very good at like every typical use case, but man, the thing just like sucks in a storm or with like unexpected turbulence. it can't really take off or land because, you know, you're literally manning the yoke and you feel the give and pull of the thing coming down.
Yep.
And, you know, flying these planes the way that he describes it to me, especially these really big planes, is they have a certain feel. And that's like really difficult to code into any kind of autopilot or AI system. I don't really know if I want to get on a plane that doesn't have a person in it, I guess I would also say.
I mean, talking about that, it's not exactly the same thing because, I mean, flying a plane is probably infinitely more difficult. But it's also one of the things I try to tell like software developers, like it's more than just writing the code or doing everything as in documentation. Is how do you use this code to solve a problem? Like eventually, even if you have like a fleet of AI tools, it's going to come down to how do you use them to solve whatever problems are in front of you. And that'll probably be what differentiates developers or managers, as case may be, in that scenario, because everybody has access to these tools, but what are you able to create? Are you able to approach certain problems even with the same set of tools? So it's just like everyone has access to, everybody cannot build an application, but what kind of application can you build? Well, everyone cannot use AI tools, but what can you do with them? There's autopilots here, you're flying in the storm, but can you handle the storm? I think it's something that is just very key for everyone, regardless of that field, to just know that the tools will always be there, but it's like, what can you do with them, basically?
Yeah, and going back to the original reason for the article, like the burnout question.
Yeah.
Like, I think that employers are always going to try to get the most bang for the buck where they can. So like if it's, hey, you're going to start coming back to the office because we have lunch now. Like, okay, lunch. Oh, by the way, we have dinner. And we have these events. And we're running a hackathon on the weekend that we need to have people hands-on for. And we have a launch on Monday. So like, there are always going to be like these little carrots dangled in front of you. Like, I think what I learned early in my career when I was much younger and had more energy is like those opportunities where maybe do put some extra time or go travel to do whatever reason, those help set you up for when you're 20 years later, when you're like, oh, you know what? Actually, I think I can just get my job done a couple hours a day and then, you know, write design docs or do more people management. Like all that, you set the stage early on to get to the point where, okay, yes, I can afford to get like, to just like have the decision made that I can make more money and et cetera. And it's like the age old engineering answer, which it depends. And it's like everyone's situation is going to be different. And I think we're better off without standards, but I do see the reason for like the need for standards. So I'm here for it.
Yeah. One of the frameworks that was helpful, like thinking through this, and I think, because my initial read of this was like, hell yeah, like I've been burned out before. Like we should do something about that. But then I started to think through some of these frameworks of like how this has happened in the past, where like the steel mill is a great example, where like the literal means of production for the steel mill was, yes, that workforce, but the actual place and the actual like machinery and stuff owned by the mill. So like those people could organize to get better working conditions, more safety, to then be able to, you know, take back some more of that power for the actual means of production. Where in tech, it's definitely different, where like I could just go and like the means of production is basically just like in my brain, right? Where I can like go and output some code and do some thing. And in theory, I could go ship, you know, a bunch of stuff that could be a competitor to Amazon and Cloudflare and Block and X and whoever. But that paradigm starts to get so much muddier for me when I start to think about like the future of what work looks like with these fleets of AI agents and stuff that I'm managing, because like I don't have a fleet of H100s in my house. Like that means of production is not within my means. And especially like years and years down the road, where it's like, what happens to that future generation of engineers who don't have so much of that means of production in their minds, where they can just go and like execute on something. They're so reliant on vibe coding and so reliant on the steel mill of of AI agents, I guess, to really pull on this analogy. Does that kind of make sense? That's kind of where I land so in the middle with this, where I'm just like, oh, I don't know, right?
I think time is always going to change because I wasn't there, but I'm imagining, for example, when we started with the early days of the computer and it was a very manual process to do the ones and zeros, the punching, the, you know, the assembly and all of those things.
Yeah.
And then the smarter languages came. I'm sure some of those engineers felt, how would you understand how a computer works if you just tell it to print? There's going to be that feeling there, but then we continuously keep moving forward. So maybe in a century's time, vibe coding might just be the assembly language of whatever coding we have at that point in time. And it becomes relevant to even know how the, what's it called, the ones and zeros work. I'm not saying that's what the case would be, but I'm just saying like, things are just going to continuously get built on what is working, and what isn't working is going to get eventually. So,
yeah, and I think there will always be opportunity for folks to like go back and learn like the old school way.
Yeah.
Like in high school, I had a car that you had to like, I had to maintain it because it was like, it was it was garbage basically. So I had to change my oil. I always had to like check the radiator for leaking fluid. I changed my own brakes. I haven't changed my own brakes in years. Like that's not a thing I want to do. I've never again in my life do I want to go jack a car up in my driveway,
right,
and drain oil. But I know how it works. And I'm like one YouTube video away from learning how that works in whatever code base. So I don't know, like it's, again, it depends, but like it'll be interesting moving forward.
Yeah.
I want to switch over to, I got two picks. Actually, I got one pick really. I was listening to a podcast this morning with the CEO of Superhuman. And I've been a Superhuman user for a couple of years now, actually. And I've been aware of Superhuman since before it was, his other company was Reportive. Because I used to do sales at a large enterprise, and I used Reportive to like understand my my LinkedIn connections through my Gmail, and that was like his original idea. But what I'm getting at is they just had a state of AI and productivity report that they just shared, and there were some pretty cool nuggets in there. It's a nice little PDF that we'll link into the show notes. But yeah, 82% of the professionals leverage AI features in email, and almost 70% use AI messaging and calendar tools, respectively. And I love Superhumans. So the report, read the report, because like productivity and like booking calendars, like Ace, when you book this time with us, like we use cal.com. It just happened. It checks our calendars. With Superhuman, I went through a bunch of emails and just responded like, no thanks. And I just use AI to basically say no thanks. And it writes in my own words, oh yeah, blah, 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 blah. Like we don't want whatever you're selling. But that's just like so tedious of going through all that stuff and being like, I don't want to respond to all this stuff. But also if I don't respond, it's going to be in like this weird loop. So like, how do I, and the other thing is that unsubscribing, if there's an unsubscribe link, you just click the one in Superhuman and it unsubscribes and deletes all the emails. So yeah, I think they're doing AI really well. And like for a company that's been over 10 years old, they had like a huge resurgence in the last couple of years. But yeah. I feel like I'm selling Superhuman, but try not to.
I mean, I got sold. I'm looking at the website right now. I'm like, okay. So yeah.
Listeners will know that I've been on a journey with Apple and Mac's like default apps. At one point I was talking about Automator, and I've been using the Mail app recently, which actually has been very, you know, surprising and delightful, partially because Apple Intelligence will like just surface.
Oh, wow.
The most important things were like things from like my wife or something that it knows that I probably want to actually look at. So yeah, I think email and calendar, I mean, that's just such a good use case for some of this stuff, especially in the like summarization realm, which I think is probably the best thing that LLMs can do today. Just like summarize a bunch of text.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, I'm a big fan as well. You using AI for your productivity, Ace?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I've been an avid driver on Goose, especially for documentation. There's this MCP server I really like, the knowledge graph. Basically takes like any block of data or information, documents, and just kind of like does a knowledge graph of them, and you can, you know, base questions off of it. I think that's helped me out, especially working like on documentation and stuff. But yeah, Goose has been an avid driver for me, if I'm being honest. I'm not even trying to sell. Because I mean, like I was working on a task that I was like, you know, just go over this pull request. I'm not sure I understand what's going on here. Can you go through this? Well, I'm trying to see any other AI tools outside of that. I'll probably say video editing using like CapCut or Canva. That's also been like one very nice point of AI coming into like my day-to-day life, basically.
I saw a really crazy video recently of somebody that built an MCP server for Ableton, which is a audio workstation for like DJs and music producers and stuff. And it basically was just like, hey, make me a song in like 130 beat with a like kick drum on 4/4, and it sounds like this, and it sounds like this. And it just like, and the whole like Ableton project just appeared, which to me, I mean, I've played around with some of these things before, like playing guitar and a little bit of MIDI, and you know, you come up with like kind of a terrible sounding thing. But that was pretty crazy to me, where I was like, wow, like, there it is, just the whole song, you know?
It is the same.
It's wild.
Yeah. That is wild, man. What this has been not a wild conversation. It's actually been pretty awesome to kind of catch up with what you've been doing, Ace, and what Block's been doing. And folks, it is time to touch the goose and check out Codename Goose on GitHub and on the website as well.
Thanks for having me, Brian. This is an amazing pleasure. Nice to meet you, Jud.
Yeah, you too.
Excellent. Listeners, stay ready. That's all the time we have for today. If you're interested in being a guest on the show, or if you'd like to suggest a topic, find us at x.com/opensourceready. Open Source Ready is brought to you by HeavyBit, the leading investor of developer-first startups. For more information, visit HeavyBit.com.